Welcome to yet another episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am the Bucher end of things, Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong, not yet left for Rio. So again, one last opportunity to say hello. By the way, speaking of which, do you know jiu-jitsu?
I do not. But
do you know taekwondo? Do you know any sort of martial arts?
I do not. But evidently, so, I need to know something.
I'm just going to say, because the report is out there that there was a Russian diplomat, I think it was, who disarmed a would-be robber and shot him with his own gun. So I just want to know, if it comes to that, what's your plan B or plan A when it comes to you get held up by somebody who's holding a gun?
Well, let's just hope that doesn't happen. So I don't have a plan, but my ultimate plan is to not be in that situation. Yeah, it's not to be in that situation. So hopefully I will not have to be in that situation.
So while I'm joking that this may be the last time that we actually get a chance to do a podcast together, that may be reality because you're not prepared. You're not prepared to go to Rio. You already know what you could be potentially facing, and you're basically saying, well, I just hope that doesn't happen. I hope I don't see a mosquito. I hope I don't see somebody with a gun. I hope that I'm not swimming in water with decapitated bodies, but you're going to Rio.
Are you done trying to scare us?
I'm
going to Rio. Okay,
yes, you are.
I'm going to Rio. So let's get that clear.
I just want you to be prepared and for what is not a remote possibility, apparently, but a distinct possibility.
Well, let's talk about where is all this coming from.
Okay. Oh, you want to go there? So, well, before we do that.
Because I'm upset. No, I'm going to tell you, I'm upset about this because where is this coming from? This is coming from the media. If all of these things were...
Yeah. Well, are you saying they're not true?
I'm not saying they're not true. What I'm saying is, let's consider the source.
Ooh. So there's a distrust. So let's get into that. Let's get into BJ Armstrong's distrust of the media and where that stems from.
Well, it stems from, you know, being a part of the media, being a part of the stories that were reported. I have to question the source. I have to question, what is the motive of reporting news? Like that story right there. Okay, if all of this was a concern, safety of the athletes, all these things that we're talking about that we're hearing coming out of Rio.
Mm-hmm.
Why are the Olympics there then? Why? Okay. So if the people, the IOC and all these people aren't afraid, then why am I going to be afraid? Why am I going to let this fear take over me and the way I think and the way I live? And clearly the IOC and all these people had an opportunity to do something about this prior to this. So clearly it wasn't an issue when they made this decision. So why all of a sudden now am I going to walk around in fear and do all those things?
Well, I'm not suggesting that you walk around in fear. I'm not suggesting that you don't go to Rio. I mean, sometimes you have these things that are just so big that changing direction. It's an ocean liner. You just got to avoid the icebergs. You can't say we're going to turn around and go back and get a different boat. I mean, that's not realistic, right? So I'm not suggesting that, but I'm also like, you go into it thinking I need to take precautions, and you don't appear to be doing that. And I just want to be honest with you in my concern for my friend, unlike what transpired before we did this podcast. So we were going to start recording this at noon and you weren't available. And you said, give me 2 seconds. That's a lie. That's a lie. And our friendship is based on truth. 2 seconds was not going to get it done. So what am I supposed to do with that? We are beginning our conversation about recording this podcast and about getting back on the same page with a lie. Give me 2 seconds. Okay, I gave you 2 seconds. Another 2 seconds. Like, be honest. You know what? I need 15, 20 minutes. I need a half an hour. I thought you weren't afraid to tell me the truth. You could have told me the truth that this is how much time I need. Instead, you said, give me 2 seconds because what? Either you didn't want me to get mad or you didn't want to look bad that you were going to be that far off of schedule. Now, which is it?
I don't think the listeners...
or what? You don't think they care?
I don't think they really care. So,
hey, as you've said, this is our podcast. We can use it the way we want to. If this becomes the least listened to podcast, then I may revise my view. I just need them to know who they're listening to, and they're getting to know us through this podcast. So I think they need to know. I'm happy to move on now. I just needed to. I didn't. It was a rhetorical question.
Okay.
I didn't need you to really answer it. Right. I just needed to put that information out
okay.
there.
Okay. Are you done? I want to know if you're done. Are you done? Did you get it all out?
I'm done. I did get it all out. And this is what I need to know is your distrust of the media. Now, we just had something happen just a couple of days ago where you were called by ESPN, ESPN.com, and asked about LeBron James and LeBron James talking about chasing a ghost, as in Michael Jordan. You provided some quotes, some comments on that. And they suddenly became not only part of a ESPN.com piece, but then they were being, as happens with ESPN now, it became a topic that was being debated and broadcast on SportsCenter, on First Take? I mean, pretty much every show that they have. So how much in your start with, I don't believe what's going on in Rio, or I question it because the media is reporting it. If that's the case, then how do you approach something when ESPN calls you for your comment about a subject like LeBron James and your former teammate, Michael Jordan?
Well, it's not that I have distrust. I think the stronger word is that I want to investigate for myself. So, for instance, we started this conversation off with Rio. Of course, I'm aware of all the things that's being reported out of there, but I don't think I can get a better source than the people and the security people, the USA Olympic team, and all the people there to get a fair understanding of what's going on from the people that are there on the ground.
Got you. And you've done that.
And absolutely, I've done that. So, you know, I don't want, I'm just going down there blind of what's going on. I'm fully aware of what's going on, but I also don't want to get things blown out of proportion, because a lot of times what ends up happening on the ground is different from what's being reported in the news. The sensationalism of news is a headline, but it's quite different than the people that are there. And I wouldn't allow my clients or myself to go down there if I didn't think it was safe or we had the proper security that were needed to not only for my clients, but for myself. That's the first thing. When it comes to news stories and things like, you know, the quote, you know, that I was just a part of, you never know what's going to take. And I'm very aware of names. I'm very aware of headlines. And I always find it funny, something that's a 2-minute conversation suddenly is this major story or this major headline or this major, oh, this is what BJ said. Now, the thing that I want to express about that quote or about that subject was, it's time now for the next generation of players to go beyond what even they thought were possible. Excellence can't be attained if there is a ceiling on it. Either you're going to go through it and go beyond whatever you thought was possible and seek excellence, or you're just going to say, well, I can't do better than that, so I'll just stay here. What those players did before Michael Jordan, what those players did during his era, and what these players are doing now, it is what it is. But now it's time to move on. It's time to look at the next generation and say, you know what? The barometer has been set at this level. Can we go beyond that? And that's what I'm saying. Shoot for it, young man. Shoot for it. Because this generation of player, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're more athletic. They have available more information. They have better training. They have the best of the best of the best. Go for it. Why not go for it? Why not? We're always saying why we can't do something. Why not? Why can't you be the greatest player ever to play the game? What's holding you back? What's holding you back? Why can't you reach for that goal? Why can't you be the best of the best of the best? And whatever it is these young people want to do, because today's generation, this younger generation, they're fearless, Rick. They're fearless. These young people, they're doing things.
I've heard that somewhere before. I can't remember where I heard it.
And I love these young people. I love the energy. I love it. They're just not afraid. So go for it. Go for it. Don't even let that negativity of not saying I can't do something even seep in. Go for it, young people, because you got it, and you're at the right time in your life when you're young. You have all of these thoughts and ideas. Go for it, man. I'm pushing them.
So just to be clear, LeBron James did a piece with Lee Jenkins, who's sort of become his Ahmad Rashad now, as far as anytime there's a one-on-one or he wants to get a message out. And I don't say that too disparagingly with Lee. I think he's a terrific writer, but I'm always a little leery when it becomes, there's always one guy who presents what a guy is thinking, and there's never balance. There's never like the positive and the negative. All that said, in that piece, LeBron James said, "My motivation is the ghost I'm chasing, the ghost played in Chicago," meaning Michael Jordan. And I think what you were suggesting and what you said is, you know, chasing a ghost is in make-believe land, and this is the LeBron James. If you want to be the best, get rid of the comparisons. Those are some of the quotes that you provided for ESPN. Don't use that as an excuse. Don't use that as, like, it's unattainable. I can't really... How do I chase down a ghost? How do I catch a ghost? Like, just go for it. And I would say that this is really, and you and I have had a conversation about this on other matters, isn't this in keeping with LeBron James? LeBron James never did the dunk contest. He always teased us with, "I'm going to be in the dunk contest. And do you want to be greater than Michael Jordan?" Or the conversation all along the line, he has steadfastly tried to avoid that, either comparisons or to make a claim of, "This is what I'm after," or "I'm willing to go and get this done." Even when he went back to Cleveland and it started to look as if they might not win, you know, there might be issues. It was, "I really didn't come back to Cleveland to win a championship." Now, he ended up getting it done, but there seems to be this inherent like fear of making a statement out of maybe the fear of failure, the fear of not achieving it, and then how do I look if I ultimately don't achieve that? What is it, BJ? What's the distinction between those players who will say, Derrick Rose said it when he got to Chicago, "Hey, I want to be greater than Michael Jordan." We've seen guys unafraid to take that challenge. Kobe Bryant, unafraid to take that challenge. What's the difference between those guys and a guy who's even as great as LeBron James, who sort of fears that, how will I look if I say I want to do something or I'm going to do something and ultimately I do not achieve it?
That's a loaded question. I will say this.
Loaded in what way? I mean, it's complicated, complicated, because loaded has a negative connotation. Loaded it's almost an unfair question. Like, there's one question underneath another one.
Well, the thing is it's... To answer that question and say, how come someone is afraid or fearful, I can't answer that because I don't know that
if he's
answer.
Afraid or fearful.
If he's afraid or fearful. Okay. I don't know.
That's
that.
Fair. That's fair.
I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know that. There's no way for me to know that. I'm not here to bash any players or, well, back in the day. No, I'm here. Life goes on. Let's move forward. The thing that is interesting is when you see something or you see someone achieve something, you begin to look at or evaluate or have the opportunity to witness their mindset. And the one thing about, it's even weird for me to call him Michael doing this podcast. When I say Michael Jordan or Michael, as you know, he's referred to, that's not what we called him, people who knew him and played with him. To us, he was always just the black cat.
The black cat.
He was the black cat. Okay. He was just the black cat.
Well, wait a minute. You didn't call him black cat.
That's what we called him. See, so all of these things, Michael. So when I hear this, I go, these people don't really know him.
I got you.
Because those of us who know him.
Is that like Magic with and Buck?
Magic was just young Buck to us.
Right.
Okay. No one called him Magic. Like, that was just... That was, I don't even know who Magic was. He was just young Buck. When I see the black cat, he knows what I mean. The cat, no matter what the circumstances are, is going to land on his feet. See, this is a mindset here. I'm not worried about.
This is Kobe with the black mamba.
I don't know what Kobe's doing. I didn't play with Kobe. I don't know that. Okay. I can only speak on what
I know, but
understand.
I'm just saying from the mindset standpoint.
The mindset is the most important thing here. It is very important that I don't want somebody to be something that maybe they don't want to be. Or it's very important for me not to impose, I want you to be this. And no. See, I know what the cat was going to do every single time he stepped out on the floor. Right now, the greatest example was just last week. It was very funny. I was flipping through the channels or whatever, and all of a sudden, I see Michael Jordan at Chris Paul's basketball camp. Now, to us or to the people, it was just, oh, Michael, he's so competitive. No, that's just what he does. He can't help himself. You don't understand. This isn't about, he can't cut that off. That's the difference between, this isn't something where you learn it, you cut it on, you turn it off, you use it when you need it. That's who he is every single day. The cat was going to challenge you. We used to argue about whose luggage was going to come off the conveyor belt first.
Now, argue or bet?
Bet, argue, and then we redo it again. And we none of us had anything to do with it. Bet. I bet you my luggage comes off before yours comes off. Okay. This is who he is. There is no score with him. There is no winning and losing. The score right now for him is 0-0. He's trying to figure out a way right now.
Right. He just wants to score the next bucket somehow, some way, and
somehow,
whatever.
Somehow, some way. This is the mindset of him. And then let's move on, which I want to share with all the generation, the next generation of players that come through here. The cat, Black Cat, was mad when you showed up to the gym to even play the game because he felt that was disrespectful. I'm going to say it again. He was mad when you showed up to the game. Oh, you think you can beat me? I don't want to hear it, when you're playing against someone with a different mindset, either you're going to match that intensity or that person is going to dominate you because they're playing from a higher perspective and a higher level than you. All of us who have played professionally know this isn't just a physical thing where you just play, you show up and da, da, da. Mentally is the most important part of the game of anything.
Agreed.
But especially in professional sports. And mentally, if a person is already mad that Rick Bucher showed up to even play the game, that person is at a decided advantage if you're just out there saying, well, I just want to run the plays that the coach is writing up on the board. No, the cat is already like, this guy actually showed up at 7:30 and wanted to play against me. He was actually mad. That was his mindset. So when you look at who this person was, and when I saw this, I was like, this is a totally different guy. This is a different dude. Where did he get this? And I was just like, wow, I had never seen that before. And all of us who play with him had seen that before. But we learned to respect it because that's who he was. Not only in the basketball game. He did it when we was playing cards on the plane. He did it when we was playing cards on the bus. He did it when we played golf. Every aspect about him was competing. And when you see him now at his age, he's still competing. And when you see him sitting on the sidelines of the game, somehow he's competing. When I see him in Vegas at Summer League, he's going to say something to me that's going to challenge me to compete. I guarantee it. He can't help himself. So when you know the mindset of the other person that you're lining up against, don't expect to be better than that person if you don't have the same mindset. And all I want to do is share with the young people of today is, this is the mindset. This is the sense of urgency you better come with before you start saying things like, I want to be better than Michael Jordan. Because Michael Jordan was playing by a different set of rules. And if you want to beat him, you better know what you're facing. So I'm just giving you the scouting report because you got the physical talent, no doubt about it. No one here can say that you look at LeBron James' physical talent. No one can say that physically, he's not there. I'm not here to say that LeBron James may arguably, at the end of his career, be better than Michael. Maybe he knows something we don't know. I don't know that. But what I do know is this persona here, that Black Cat, that was a different dude.
Yeah. I think that's often what people forget about. I saw that Jay Williams, who played with Jordan. So yeah, this is, I didn't know we were going to get into this, but I took issue with this because Jay Williams, who was Chicago Bull draft pick, ended up playing with Michael or playing against Michael when he was with the Washington Wizards and made the comparison and said, LeBron James, I played against, I don't know if you said, I played against both, and I can say it, LeBron James is the best player. LeBron James was better than Michael Jordan. And I was thinking, you can't compare playing against Michael Jordan with the Washington Wizards to the Michael Jordan, the mentality might have still been there, but Michael in the early 90s, mid 90s was a bad man. Like, I just don't know that people today appreciate what Michael was for the better part of his career compared to then. Now we see all that LeBron James is doing.
I'm going to say this to all the young people listening out here. It's impossible to be the greatest ever. That's impossible. Can't just say this guy's the greatest ever. What you can do is be the very best that you can be. Be the very best that you can be and let your body of work stand on its own. And after you're done, then that's what makes sports great. We can have this discussion. We can have this debate, Rick. Rick can make his point. I can make my point. I love going to the barbershop, not just to get my hair cut, because I love it when the guys start telling me about who can play and who can't play. That's what I love. And I love this.
But you take it in stride, knowing. See, this is the part for me is that it's fun to debate these things, but in my mind, there's no final answer. There's no definitive answer. It's all subjective. It's
absolutely
all, there aren't, and people try to like take numbers. That's what I really find funny. When people pull out the statistics or they want to, like, even the comparisons of championships and averaged points and all of that. And I'm thinking, no. It's not even a matter of rings. It's not like you can't drill it down to the point where you can make you can reach a definitive conclusion. It's still simply an opinion. Now, before we leave this whole mentality thing, because I know from what it was like going from high school to college as an athlete and how the mentality changed. And having covered professional sports and having talked to a lot of guys like yourself, I know that it's like that was yet another level, going to yet another level. But it was also it was somewhat of a business at the college level, but not like it's all business at the professional level. Can you, having gone from high school to college, college to pro, can you sort of define when you talk about that like how much the mental aspect of it played a part in it? High school to college and college to pro, like if you can separate those or define the difference.
I can. For me, it was, I think it was right around 1989 or 90, my defining moment as a player came in, not in winning. We lost when I was with the Bulls in game 7 to Detroit at Detroit. And forever, that game, that series made an impact on me, because for the first time ever in my life, ever in high school, college, Pee Wee League, pro, that was the very first time that I looked at a team, I looked at a specific player and said, that team was better than us. I don't care what we did. The Detroit Pistons, I think it was 1990. I think that's the year they did win it. They were better than the Chicago Bulls. Isaiah Thomas, I don't care what I did. I don't care if I took 5 million shots in the summer. I don't care how many heels I ran. I don't care how many weights. Isaiah Thomas was going to be a better player than me. Then the next game, and the game after that, and no matter what I did. Now, that was a very defining moment for me, because that was the first time ever that I couldn't say to myself, oh, if I would have shot better, we would have won. If I would have played better, we could have done this. Oh, they just shot the ball exceptionally well. No, the Detroit Pistons were better than us. And my matchup, he was better than me. And that was the first time that I had to look at myself, admit that to myself, but still come out and compete and make him be the very best that he was going to be. Now, that moment for me, that was my moment where I had to walk into my fear, because I knew individually I couldn't win that matchup, but I knew that I had to show up and play against him and make him be his very best, no matter if I thought he was better than me or he even thought he was better than me. And he had to know that, you know what, if he didn't come to ready to play that night, I was going to be better than him. And we as a team collectively had to come with that mentality, because the Detroit Pistons, that was a great basketball team. And that was the very first time in my life that I saw someone that I knew we couldn't beat and I couldn't beat, but I had to show up and play. And I couldn't be scared. I couldn't go like, well, I can't show up and play. I had to make a choice. And my choice was, you know what? Okay, they may be better than us, but they're gonna have to prove it for 48 minutes. And when the Detroit, and for whatever reason, we as a group did that. You know, Mark Guire was a great player back then. Joe Dumars was a Hall of Fame player. Chuck Daly was a Hall of Fame coach. Bill Laimbeer he was a pretty darn good player. They had Dennis Rodman and John Sally coming off the bench. They had this guy by the name of the Microwave who was scoring on everybody. So we had to collectively figure out a way to face our fears and face our demons and show up or just lay down. And that was for me, that was my defining moment, because that was my opportunity to look at myself. That was the first time I had to look at myself and say, oh, wow, DJ, what you going to do? The Bulls, what are y'all going
to
do?
So to circle back on something else, because you obviously, we started out talking about the media and LeBron James and you being interviewed about LeBron James and Michael Jordan and that comparison. How do you think, knowing that you represent players today, how do you think players today look at the media versus the way you and your generation looked at the media?
Well, our generation, you know, because I'm older. I grew up in the business. I remember when a young Rick Bucher first started, young guy, and he was coming around and doing it. There was a level of integrity I felt in the business. There was a level of actually fact-checking before you ran a story. There was a level of where you actually gave an opportunity for a rebuttal to clear the air before you ran the story. Today, whether it's true or not, I just want to break the story first. There is a race now just to get the story out. Now, it doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be accurate. There was no integrity to the story. Now it's about who's getting the story first. To me, that's what has happened in the business. Now, there isn't a level of integrity. There isn't a level of saying, you know what? I'm going to give Rick Bucher an opportunity to rebuttal this and share his side of the story as I'm going to write this story for Sunday's front page headline, whatever it is. There's a race. It's like a race.
Well, the difficulty is I believe there are still people out there that operate that way, generally with newspapers, because newspapers still have the old system of you have editors and the timeline is different. Now, it's not with all newspapers because they use social media to get stories out there as quickly as possible. But there is more accountability in the system there. And what's disappointing to me with a place like ESPN, honestly, is that it is changed. It's funny. It used to be the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. And then that was what ESPN stood for. And then they changed it where ESPN doesn't, this is going to sound funny or maybe appropriate, ESPN doesn't stand for anything now. It doesn't, like, they changed the trademark so it doesn't stand for those things. But if they were honest, it would just be more EPN, Entertainment Programming Network, because and certainly not a news network in the same fashion, because they don't, this is my greatest issue, is that they are the most powerful voice and they have done as much as anybody to undermine the news, the way news is reported. And so that was funny for me because, like, when the whole LeBron thing blew up and we talked about it, I was like, well, yeah, it's slow. It's a slow news cycle right now. There's nothing else out there. It's about LeBron James and it's about Michael Jordan. So, of course, this thing is going to blow up and become much bigger than it is, or maybe than it deserves to be. And that's only a small example. So when you talk to your players now, how do you advise them, if you do, in dealing with the media?
I get right down to it. When you look at ESPN, let's just take them since, you know, that was the example that we used.
And by the way, you answered the phone, which I'm kind of surprised, like, because of your skepticism or your caution, I was surprised that you actually engaged.
Hey, look, you engage and you pick and choose. I advise the players this way. ESPN, they're a business. They are engaged with a business relationship with the National Basketball Association. Okay, Rick, I'm going to say that again. They are engaged in a business decision with the National Basketball. So once you know that and you understand that, young people, there's nothing really else to talk about. Now, so when you say how the news is being reported, from what perspective? What can they really say about the NBA when they're in a business relationship with the NBA? And then why am I going to waste my time getting upset about my unfair treatment on how a story is being reported? Now, when you understand the business, as the people say where I'm from, it is what it is. The kids that I work with, they understand what this really is. There's nothing getting by us when it comes to the business. So I'm not going to engage in all of this hoopla and being upset and, oh, I was misquoted and all of that. No, we understand that ESPN is in a business relationship with the National Basketball Association. So much so that it goes beyond even what the collective bargaining agreement is. Therefore, they're going to pay the NBA whether we're playing basketball or not. So what are you really saying then? What part of this don't you understand? Now, Rick, once you understand that, the question is, what are we talking about now? Because they're not in a business relationship like that with the players. If the players get locked out, the NBA still will receive whatever they agree to.
Right. That's so essentially what you're saying is the relationship between ESPN and the NBA, the NBA owners, let's be specific, the commissioner, yes, and the NBA owners, is stronger than the relationship between the NBA owners and the players.
Well, that's a fact. we're not stating that. That's a fact. Right. Now, that's a fact. And if you understand that,
right,
then you understand the business.
Okay, so I'm so glad because this takes me right to my next subject, which is a Wasserman Media Group client, which makes him, in a way, one of your clients under your umbrella. Russell Westbrook, maybe one of the guys, when we see him play and the way he approaches the game, one of the most defiant, fierce players playing in the game today. I don't know if there's anybody who plays with more energy, with more passion / anger, with more defiance about, don't tell me what I can do, I'm going to prove you wrong. That same Russell Westbrook just signed a 2-year extension for $68 million and said, I am signing this out of loyalty to you people. Now, I think he was speaking to the people of Oklahoma City, but it goes without saying that you are showing loyalty to Oklahoma City, to the fans, to the organization, to GM Sam Presti, to owner Clay Bennett. And this, for as much as we embrace and love this idea of loyalty in basketball, this struck me the same way as when the players collectively and the players union embraced Adam Silver for finally taking a stand on Donald Sterling and saying he has no place in our league. And that it was like, Adam Silver is the greatest. And he wasn't the only one. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a lot of guys walked up there and talked about how great Adam Silver was and how great the league was. And I looked at that and I thought, what are you guys doing? You are giving away your leverage. Donald Sterling has been in their midst forever, and you have a collective bargaining agreement coming up. And for the first time, you get to pull the curtain and show exactly who the owners are. And instead, you didn't question whether there were other Donald Sterlings. You didn't question why it came to this, why it took a recording with his assistant, personal assistant, to get him out of the NBA. You didn't ask any of that. You just said, man, the NBA is great. Well, is not Russell Westbrook doing the exact same thing? He has a team that has been in many ways built around KD, that has promoted KD first and foremost. And while I will say the record has been great, they've gone to the playoffs 6 of the last 7 years, went to the Western Conference Finals 3 times in that period, went to the finals once, been a great track record. The fact of the matter is, you had the GM Sam Presti and Clay Bennett and the Oklahoma City Thunder in a position where You now have the leverage. Okay, let me see how you're going to build around me. You're 24th in the league in player payroll. Don't tell me about how you're building a champion. Don't tell me about small market when I've seen what San Antonio has done. Don't tell me about any of that. Don't tell me about small market when I look at Cleveland. Tell me about how you're going to build a championship team around me. And what did he do? He said, you know what? I'm going to trust you. I'm going to pledge my loyalty. Now, if he had said, you know what, $68 million, I can't pass that up. My salary is going way up by signing that extension. If he had said, you know what, I want to make KD look bad because I'm going to show you how somebody stands up and makes it happen in a place like Oklahoma. If he had said anything else, I would have said, that's the Russell Westbrook I know. Saying, I'm staying because I'm loyal. You know what that makes me think? Russell Westbrook, you're a sucker. You're a sucker because you're buying into an idea that is not mutual. If you can't get it done, do you think the Oklahoma City Thunder, fans or otherwise, are going to stand by you? Hell no. So don't play me the loyalty card. And I bring this to you, and thank you for giving me the last 5 minutes to state all this as you fidgeted in your chair, because he's part of the Wasserman Media Group. And part of the thing that you and I are trying to do with this podcast is we're not going to buy into all the make-believe. We're not going to buy into the way guys are portrayed and the way the business of this league is portrayed. We're going to give it to you the way it really is. Well, how does a guy like Russell Westbrook, working for the same company as you do, make a move like this when it undercuts his leverage and position as a player? You told me players are smarter today than they were. This to me is not an intelligent, informed move by Russell Westbrook, giving away your leverage to make them build the team around you that you'd like to see.
Wow. That was a big statement. Well,
and that wasn't loaded. I didn't load up anything. I'm right at you.
All right, great. I'm going to cut right to it. I'm going to cut right to who this young man is at the core. We see Russell on television and we see Russell and all the things, and he's a very intense player. But I'm going to cut right to it. It's about winning with Russell. Russell has won everywhere he has been. When I say won, he has consistently won more games than he's lost. This kid is a true warrior in every sense of the word. All of us, when I say us, all of us who have participated in sports at any level want to know how good they are. It'll take Russell 9 years before he can say unquestionably that this is his team and this team will be built around him and his talent and with him being the first, second, third option. To his credit and on his journey, again, I'm going to say on his journey, that is a very important question for him to answer, to not run away from this task at hand. That's very important to him, that he understands what this means to have the responsibility on his shoulders as the lead guy. This is very important to him.
I get all that. He doesn't lose any of that if he doesn't sign the extension. Okay. He doesn't lose any of that.
Okay. It's very important for him to lead a team and the team knows where he stands. You can say all those things you're saying, Rick. In the end, if he's going to be the leader of the team, you got to put some skin in the game. Now, he's put some skin in the game right now. So his leadership and what he's doing right now, I commend it. Because you know what? He letting everybody know, I'm here. I'm going to be here. Now, let's go out here and play if you want to participate on this team. I'm not going to leave people hanging. We're going to talk about it because you and I both know the distractions that that's going to take. Now, I think it's really important for him and that organization
Wait a minute, hold on, Rick.
I think it's really important for him and that organization to answer the key question here, that the only thing that matters, can we put together a team that's going to win? That's all that matters.
That's right. That's all that matters.
All the other, whether we agree with it, disagree with it, what have you, because here is a situation here where winning is going to cover everything up. Winning covers a multitude of sins. And this young man here is a warrior. He ain't running from nothing, Rick.
That's fine. But look, they went to the Western Conference Finals this year. They were minutes away from going to the finals, which is as far as they've ever gone previously. And who knows what happens when they get there, but Kevin Durant was a presumptive free agent this summer. Everybody knew he was going to be a free agent. His being a free agent over the course of this year did nothing to stop them from doing what they did. So how is it that Russ pledging allegiance or doesn't pledge allegiance, whether he signs the extension or he doesn't sign the extension, how is that going to be a distraction that prevents them from playing for a championship? It's still going to be whether their team is good enough or not. And what's the impetus now for Oklahoma City to go to the nth degree to build a championship team right now when they know that they've got Russell under there? And it's a two-year extension. He can get out after it after a year. They basically got him for two more years instead of one. Why even give him that leverage? Why even give that away? I don't buy that it's going to be a distraction, that he saved them from a distraction.
Okay. Well, talking about doing something is different than actually doing it. Russell needs to know that he can do this. He needs to know this.
So you think he does? He doesn't know if he knows or if he can?
He hasn't played a year without Kevin Durant.
Well, he did injury-wise.
No. And he hasn't played a year where he knows coming into training camp.
Okay. All right. Fair.
That's not. Okay. Injuries happen. Things happen. I think they went 45 and I don't know. 30,
right.
I don't
You're
know.
Right. 45 and 37. And
37. Okay. Now he knows.
Okay.
He needs to know that he can do this. He needs to know that. Every player, if you want to ascend to that level, you got to know that you can do it. We think he can do it. Certainly looks by the numbers he could do it. We can talk about, but has it been done? The answer is no. He hasn't.
Okay.
So now here we have an opportunity to do it. We have an opportunity. Now, let's take these next couple years and let's figure it out and do what we got to do. Now, whether or not he continues after that, we're going to find out. But right now, what we do know is he hasn't done that. But I think it's very important to know whether you can and you can't do it. Because here's an opportunity that clearly this young man, I that's one I can speak on. Russell Westbrook ain't running away from no challenges. He ain't running away.
I would buy that.
And I can assure you for 82 games for Oklahoma City next year, number zero is going to show up.
I've never questioned that.
And all of those other things, why is he doing it? Okay, that's fine. What I do know is that young man is going to show up and answer that question. Now, after he understands what he needs to find out about himself, he'll be able to answer your question. But he's going to have to do it. Because he has the one quality in the gene, Rick, that you know that's better than anyone. He's stubborn, Rick. And for us that knows you personally, we know Rick Bucher is stubborn. And it's not true until Rick Bucher experiences that for himself. And I know Rick Bucher understands that better than anybody. Now, to us who's older, you know, we 50 years old, we sitting back here on the podcast. Hey, Rick, nobody knows that better than Rick Bucher. It's not true until you experience it for yourself. I owe this to that young man, Russell Westbrook, to let him experience what he needs to experience for himself. Now, as an older man, I could sit here and give him my opinion, but it's not true to him. Because he haven't experienced that. He needs to go out there and find out what it's like to lead a team. He needs to go and find out what that's like to do what he needs to do and all those things. He needs to go see it. He hasn't seen this yet. So, Rick, just because you and I have seen it for the last 30 years, this is his first time seeing that and experiencing it firsthand from his perspective. Now, in a couple years, Rick, he's gonna have a different view than what he has right now. I can assure you on that one. So right now, I owe that to him. We owe that to him because not many people, you and I have talked about privately about, you know, oh, man, we want these guys to show up and do all these things. Okay. Has that ever been the case here with this young man?
No. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with Russ Westbrook. I don't have a problem with his approach.
No, none of us can. But the thing is, Rick, we owe this to him to allow him to experience something he's never experienced. This will be his first year clearly being that guy.
But he would have had that experience being that guy with or without the extension. He was going to have a chance to prove himself. The difference is that Sam Presti, as the GM, was going to be under the pressure of, you just lost Kevin Durant. And by the way, if you want to get into the media and questions about the media, this is the other part. It's not just a matter of people trying to be first. It's how people are having the opportunity to be first and what are the promises that are made. Because you can draw lines. You can draw clear lines more than ever before between somebody breaks a story and then a few days later, there's a positive story about whoever was involved in that one way or another. And that's just become a distortion of what the media is supposed to be. And it hurts me because people now, as you said it, whether it's sports media, it's media in general, people distrust the media. And the media is supposed to be the watchdog. The media is supposed to be, I'm not worried about being first. I'm worried about telling the truth and I'm worried about being fair, and it's important that I tell these stories because good or bad, the general public needs to know. And if the general public doesn't trust anybody, then who are they supposed to look for their information? Now we become all isolated in our own camps and we become paranoid and we don't know who to trust. And yes, you can say, and you and I are in privileged situations where we have the opportunity to, in many cases, talk to people directly involved to find out what's going on. But the general public doesn't always have that opportunity. So how are they supposed to get that information? How are they supposed to make informed decisions in their lives? That's what we've lost. That's what we've lost with the media. And unfortunately, now we have people that are being celebrated for because they are first a lot, or they are breaking, you know, being a newsbreaker now has taken on a status. But I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, yeah, but you're cheating. You're cheating the integrity of journalism. You're cheating the entire system for your own gain. And that bothers the hell out of me.
Yeah. Well, here's what bothers me about this whole, you know, this discussion that we're having. It's time and time again, as a fan, as a person who works in the business, there are questions that I want answered as from a fan perspective. I know Sam Presti. I deal with Sam Presti. I've done business with Sam Presti and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And hopefully I'll do more business with the Thunder. But here are the questions that I wanted answered. And it's amazing to me that people in your business didn't ask these questions. For instance, okay, what was the decision-making process that we were going to stick with Kevin Durant throughout the entire year? He's been there for 9 years, and suddenly we're going to wait, and we didn't find this out till the summer. And not one person in the media has asked Sam Presti that question. I'm more concerned with why aren't we asking the questions like, Sam, when did you get wind of this? Okay, we've seen this happen before. We've seen prime examples. The latest was Carmelo Anthony when Denver.
Right. Well, actually, that one was handled the right way.
Right way or wrong way?
No. That was handled the right way. Masai Ujiri knew he was leaving and said, I'm not going to wait for him to walk out the door with nothing. I'm going to get something. He learned from the Chris Bosh situation in Toronto. He learned from the LeBron James situation in Cleveland the first time.
How can this question have not been asked? But then, Rick, the thing that is the only way to solve the problem is for the player. Now we're saying Russell's responsibility is to play. Russell Westbrook now is in, that's not his responsibility to be figuring out, well, when did you learn about all?
No. I'll give you that. Yeah.
Okay, so
if he's about winning, though, his responsibility is to give himself the best opportunity to win. And I would still say that by signing the extension, I don't think he's. You can make the case that he's helped himself. I wouldn't make that case.
Okay, so the thing that amazes me is no one has questioned anything that has happened with the decisions and how this going down throughout the entire process.
And I'll tell you,
that's to me, that's been the most amazing part of the story, is no one has said anything. And the only thing that came out this summer was Russell Westbrook signed. That's it. Okay. Kevin left, Russell signed.
Sure. Well, I'll give you another. Russell took him off the hook.
My question to you guys in the media, not you in particular, but the guys in the media, how come none of these questions were asked? Because everyone's on their path, but no one stepped up and held the team accountable. I had the same incident happen to me in the draft with Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose was going into the final year of his contract with the Bulls. Rick, he was going into the final year. Instead of going into next summer and having the possibility
of Derrick walking,
the Chicago Bulls and their management and their ownership made a decision.
Right.
Now
an informed decision?
That's their decision. Wasn't informed. That's their decision. Did they want to take the risk of going into that summer knowing very well that young man could walk away with nothing in return? That was their choice. That was their choice. So these type of decisions come up, but no one has said anything. Oh, this is that. And then we'll debate all these things. No one has said anything there about that decision. But I'm not going to allow people to say, well, Russ, you got to take this. No. Russell has nothing to do with that.
So no. And I'm not suggesting that. But first of all, Chicago's decision with Derek, considering the injury history and where the team is right now, is a little easier than moving KD when you've had a team that's been a perennial playoff team and you think that you have one more shot. Here's the other part. KD has said, or it has been, again, it has been reported that KD changed his mind at the last second, and KD has not corrected that. KD has said, no. They should have known all along. He said, when the Golden State Warriors walked in, I just had a feeling and I made a decision. And so people are looking at that and saying, or media are looking at that and saying, well, how could Sam Presti have anticipated that? He might have thought all along. And KD was supposedly saying, again, this is where the reports come in, but KD could straighten all of this out. Now it becomes KD is wishy-washy. KD is makes emotional decisions. KD is even a Benedict Arnold, in that he was saying at one point, supposedly, I'm not going anywhere. He could clear the air of all that. So ultimately, if Sam Presti's not taking the hit for this, which I would say to you, yeah, you should be able to ask point blank, are you staying? And if he says, I don't know, then you move him because you don't take that risk. But only KD can tell us if Sam Presti actually got that message, and KD is not.
You know, I don't know what KD said, and
does anybody.
Right. So, but what I do know, in being in a position of leadership like I currently am here at Wasserman, being in a position of leadership like I've been in, whether I was the captain of a team or front office of an organization, all those things, leadership requires you to accept the responsibility and hold yourself accountable to the group. Now, if there's anything to be learned here, is that every day I have to make the best call for my client's interest. I have to make the best call. Not what's the best, it wasn't this best for me, or to go on hearsay, what I've heard.
Right.
In order for me to make a decision, I have to go out there and get all the information that I can possibly get to make an informed decision. Therefore, in a leadership position, I respect when people do the best thing for their group, and whatever that may be. And it's very important for me, in the position that I am, is to never put the people here at this company, or any company that I'm involved with, or any business venture that I'm involved with, and to expose us to any type of risk, unnecessary risk, I should say.
Have you ever had to make a decision involving a player where they were telling you one thing, but your information told you another, and you had to basically defy what the player was telling you and make a decision contrary to that? Have you ever been in that position?
Yes, I've been in that position, because in the end, every player that I work with is the CEO of their corporation. every CEO, every player that I work with, I treat them as the CEO of their corporation. We are going to have disagreements on decisions, right? We're going to have disagreements. In the end, it is my job to give them my truth. That's my job. And if I have information that supports that with facts of why I'm doing it, I'm not just giving you my opinion because of an opinion. I have researched it. I've done my homework. And I have every reason to believe, based on the information that I have available, this is my decision. And here's the reason why I'm giving you this information. Now, you can't argue with the facts. You can't argue with the facts. Now, if I'm just giving you an opinion based on a gut, well, I just woke up today and no, this wasn't something I had in a dream. This wasn't something that I'm going to research it. I'm going to give you facts to support the reason I'm sharing this with you and the reason I'm having the position that I'm having. Now, it's up to that individual to understand and say yes or no or what have you. And I have this all the time. That's my job. That is my job. I'm not doing my job if I don't do that.
Have you ever had to cut somebody loose as a result of that? Have you ever had to go in another direction and say, you know what, we can't work together on this thing, or I can't represent you because you might be telling me one thing, but everything else I have heard and know, the facts tell me that that's not what's going to happen, or you're not committed to that. Have you ever had to be in that situation?
Agent
or otherwise.
Now. Yeah, I'm 48 now. I speak my piece. I give you my thoughts, and then I move on. It is very important for me in this business. It's important for me in life is to not be attached to the outcome by holding on to something because I just want to be right. See, that's what comes with age. I don't want to be right. You know, it's amazing to me when my teenage son thinks he can get away with something as if I haven't been around that block before. He's more slick than I am. I've been around that block 1,000 times, but he's just seeing this for the first time. So he thinks like, oh, dad doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
I've
experienced the same.
Now, it is important for me to allow my 15-year-old son to think that he's getting away with something and allow him to do it. It's very important for him to think so that when he's 25 or 30, him and I can laugh about it. Hey, remember that time when you thought you was getting away with that? Yeah, I knew what you was doing. See, you act like you've been around the block more than I have. You haven't. This is your first time seeing it. This is your first time in high school. This is your first time. Well, I'm going to visit a friend's house. Yeah, I bet you are. Sure. Hey, I get it. I'm the dumb dad, right? I get that. So I'm going to play my role. So it's very important for me to allow young people to make mistakes. It's okay. Very important. That's very important to me. That's very important to me as a player. That was very important to me as a father, as a husband, and as an agent, to allow young people to make their mistakes on their own terms, and then we move on.
Right.
And I'm not judging anybody because I've made mistakes. If I was perfect, then I can say something. Because someone gave me that same opportunity, hey, now we can all laugh. We can laugh at it and move on, and hopefully most important thing, hopefully we'll get an opportunity to recover from whatever that mistake was.
Okay. Well, we are going to move on from this podcast because while we haven't gotten to everything that we had hoped to, we've gotten to enough. And so we will save some of the other stuff that we have for the next time you and I convene, which I believe will be in person down in LA, hopefully. But it certainly will be one more time before you ride off to Rio. And you're never, and you are heard from again. In fact, we're going to do a podcast from Rio, aren't we? And we can hear like the gunshots and the craziness in the background.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
We're going to hear exactly what's going on. Because you know what? Once I'm there on the ground, then I can tell you exactly what's going on.
Okay.
But the next time we do this podcast,
yes.
I want to talk about Summer League.
Okay.
I want to really talk about Summer League because, you know, it's a big thing. It goes on all month. You and I both have to be in Vegas in the middle of the summer.
Yep.
I don't know whose idea this was.
Yep.
And I think we should really discuss this in detail.
Okay. We will. That's a promise for the next podcast. We will get into the Summer League and guarantee that if BJ wants to talk about it, he's got some issues with it. And we will get into them, all of them, in the next podcast. Let's thank you for listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast on the cycle. We'll talk to you again next week. See you, BJ.